Welcome to Go Additive, where your hosts combine their real-world professional 3D printing experience to deliver valuable opinions that will help you peer behind the curtain of the additive industry. And now, Co-Engineer's Own, Tyler Reed and Tate Brown.
Oh, yeah.
It feels nice. Holy smokes.
6 months minus one day since I heard that jingle.
We're back.
We're back.
We're back.
The boys are back in town.
You know, there's just not enough songs about that. Okay, we're recording.
We are.
We're a little rusty.
I'm sure we are.
We've had some moments this morning already that have kind of proven that we're out of our workflow.
We're kind of rusty just even talking with each other.
That's what I was saying. Like, people think that we've been on a hiatus from the podcast, but we kind of haven't really talked to each other.
We've been on a hiatus from each other.
We needed a break, everybody. No, it's sad. It's sad.
It's been weird. It's been quite the year.
Hectic.
Yes.
Kind of hectic.
Hectic, for sure.
How's it been hectic for you?
I'm printing a much fewer parts.
What are you doing instead?
Like, just managing, you know, like
your team got huge.
Huge. Yeah.
Huge.
So it's been more managerial than, you know,
how do you feel about that?
It's fine. It's a new challenge, you know?
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that actually how you feel?
Yeah. It's a new challenge. Okay. I love challenges and there's so much to learn.
Yeah.
So much to learn.
Yeah, you need some leadership skills. You
know? I absolutely do.
You're great. Okay, that's cool. So you basically, your hands off the printer more nowadays.
More and more.
Yeah. So now you're having to trust the folks under you to really relay information about machines at this point.
Some of materials. My knowledge is purely secondhand, which is a strange place to be for me.
Do you feel good about talking about it with people when it is secondhand information?
Well, to a degree, like I'm comfortable. I know where my line is.
Okay.
You know, and there's always a line, right? There's always a line of where your experience ends and then it's just theoretical.
Do you make sure people know that?
Well, yeah, I mean, maybe. Maybe.
You're so full of it, dude. I wish I could swear on this podcast because you're so full of it, dude. Like, Tyler will lie just to see what he can get away with. And he'll just do it. He'll wait for someone to Google it. And if they don't, he'll just keep lying. And he loves it. Okay, so I do remember where we kind of left off with the podcast is we said we were going to do a better job of kind of giving folks a quick overview of some things we're going to talk about. Obviously, we tend to veer off and we might gravitate towards one subject or another.
We'll try to stay on the rails because we've got
just a few
minutes. This is not going to be a long episode.
Yeah. So I want to talk low volume production in one of the hobbies that I've gotten into recently. I want to talk.
Ooh, really?
Yes. I want to talk about, just since it's the holidays, I started dating someone new. And
is that what we want to talk about?
Well, I don't want to talk about that, but I want to talk about how funny it is to meet people and tell them what you do.
Does she know you're a famous podcaster?
Oh, super famous. Yeah.
But for real, does she? Has it come up?
No.
Wow.
Keep it on the down low. That way I can talk about whatever I want here.
All right.
And then the state of Stratasys is something we have to talk about. Because there was a lot of noise there for a while. And
it's part of the reason why it's been 6 months.
Yeah.
It's not even close to the full reason, but it's a significant reason.
Mm-hmm. And then just general catch up. Okay. I just want to talk about, you know, what's been going on with you. If you ever finished your fence, how things have been going in your personal life. I want to know since we haven't caught up.
Okay. I mean, I'm willing to talk about some of that.
Okay. Okay. As long as it's not too personal. So let's jump in then. Should we knock out the Stratasys news right away?
Yeah, sure.
Can you do it in a sentence?
Nothing happened.
Yeah. Okay. So there was a ton of noise. You know, we were thinking things could change for us and for the industry. and maybe this big conglomerate would have, like, this thing would come together and just be this ginormous entity that would be every 3D printer company now was one.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what it started to feel like. It'd be
like the acme of 3D printing.
Yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm so glad that we weren't doing, like, weekly updates on that.
It would have been a total waste of time.
100%.
Because nothing happened.
Nothing happened. So here we are, right where we started. There's been a lot going on, but nothing actually happened. There could be things going on in the background right now, but...
There could be. My take is that things have chilled quite a bit. You know, especially because the valuations of these companies, which is largely what was being negotiated, have stabilized downwards. So... And also, it was a huge distraction. And I think everyone recognizes that this whole year has been this kind of looming outlook of, like, uncertainty. And that affects everything.
Mm-hmm.
It affects everything.
Well, and it's going to go into 2024, too.
So I would hope maybe 2025 things pick back up. Yeah, I don't have high certainty, but that's kind of where my head's at.
So prior to our recording, you said that there were some articles that you read that you were interested in talking about. Does that have anything to do with this as a whole, the industry as a whole, or?
It's more of the industry as a whole, less specifically on these deals.
Okay.
That were on the table. But it was a series of articles that Joris Peels. Peels?
Never heard of her.
What are you talking about? What are you talking about?
I'm not trying to... yeah, I don't know. I don't know that.
Well, person. you know the 3D Pod, right?
Yeah.
3D Pod?
Yeah.
With Joris and Maxwell.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very famous.
And I don't know if he owns 3Dprint.com or he has an ownership stake in it, or he's basically the man there. Anyway, he published a series of articles in October, November, titled, the first one was Rest in Peace, 3D Printing.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is pretty
clickbaity.
It's a little inflammatory, but it was kind of this overall grim outlook at the industry. Not far off base, though. Not far off base.
Can you summarize it for us?
Maybe points of it. You know, one of his more quantitative points was that overall revenues are quite flat over the past 8 to 10 years. I mean, you look at some of the major players that have been around that whole time, 3D Systems, Stratasys, whatever, the revenues have been fairly flat in that 500 to 600-ish million a year. And year-over-year growth has been either single digits positive, single digits negative, but just kind of riding that little mellow kids roller coaster. And that's worrisome, right? Especially for an industry that we've talked about, it's this expectation is always up and to the right. I think we even had an episode titled that.
Yeah. Yep, we did. And are we just talking big 3D printing?
No, I don't think so.
Is it including companies like Prusa or Bamboo Labs or, you know, these more prosumer and consumer model type printing? Because I feel like that's gaining popularity.
Well,
but the numbers aren't there.
In the article itself, it doesn't mention those. And 3Dprint.com is more focused towards industry.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're right. You do see, at least Bamboo has made a name for itself this year. Prusa, I don't know if I see it more or less. But if I were to ask, you know, does the outlook in that article extend to those companies? I would say, yeah, probably, you know, overall.
I don't think so. I disagree with that. Yeah. Because I have friends that have just recently gotten into 3D printing. Mm-hmm. I also have friends who've been into 3D printing who've bought more prosumer type machines like a Bamboo Labs instead of just like an open source, you know.
Yeah.
Build it yourself system.
Yeah. It's hard to say, you know, how much money's flowing through that market.
Not a ton. I mean, when your machine cost is...
Yeah, it's all small.
Yeah. just a fraction of what these larger systems cost. It doesn't really move the meter.
No, not really.
But ultimately, that could lead to more industry adoption later on. Interesting. Okay.
So kinda, yeah. I mean, he had a series of articles, and one of the themes of these other articles are this idea that there's very few wins for production. Like, I think a company that he points out is Align.
That's going to tie into.
Yeah, I know. It sounds like it will. There's a company that he points out, Align, that, you know, that do the aligners.
Oh, yeah. Yep. The teeth liners.
Yeah. And their revenue has, like, it represents a significant chunk of the overall industry revenue, like one company. So we need more companies like that. And there hasn't been very many wins on that level over the past 10 years, which is true. It's a fair take. It's true.
Hmm.
Now, we could speculate on the reasons. There's tons of valid reasons for that. And I don't think the main reason is not for want, but for just some roadblocks that exist, either cost or uncertainty about whether or not it makes sense to go into production with 3D printing. You know, a lot of it's probably cost, though, and throughput volume.
Which, depending on the industry, it really is industry dependent. You also have a lot. You must have confidence in the team that's operating the machines. And if I'm to be fair, you know, you're the same as me. We do a lot of research before we purchase something. You and I are both very frugal.
Mm-hmm.
We'll spend big money, but we're going to have done a lot of research before we've done it.
Yeah.
And we purchase things that can later be sold for probably the same amount.
Yeah.
Or more.
Yeah.
That's kind of our thing. But companies, in my opinion, you know, with my personal view, and maybe you'll kind of feel this as well, as I've seen the sales process happen with a lot of companies, if it's FDM, everybody knows how that works. So investing in a large machine seems easy.
Yeah.
But when you're investing in something like DLP and no one in your print lab's ever run a DLP system, right, or the intent is to use it as a bridge to production type machine, I don't know. I would say like 4 of 5 companies that are investigating aren't doing it well.
Sure.
And I mean that both in that they're not running it through its paces enough, or they're just not making sure that it works for their application. And I mean that in two ways. One, they're not working us hard enough to qualify the system, but they're also not, they're just not asking the right questions to ensure that it is the right machine for them overall. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
And that kind of blows my mind. So is it our job to like educate in that way and say, hey, listen, you guys, I don't think you've looked into this hard enough.
It's our job to educate, no doubt. It's also our job to recognize some of those behavioral patterns and reassess, are we educating in the right way? Right? Because this growth is not going to come from the consumer side first. It's going to be led by the product side, no doubt. So I think we have to recognize that bringing this technology on, there's inherent risk because of the uncertainties, right? So if we can reduce uncertainties, then that reduces the risk. That's easier said than done. One of the best ways to reduce uncertainty is adoption, proliferation, so that people have an example of someone being successful with it that they can relate to, you know, so that there's this mimetic relationship there where, oh, if they do it and they're successful, I can do it and I can be successful too. Right now, much of the machines are being placed in companies that already went through that process years ago. And so they're already bought in, they're upgrading machines, buying new machines, et cetera. Or they have...
Sorry about that.
It's okay. Or they have higher tolerance for risk. So they're the pioneers, they're the innovators, they're the people whose maybe business plans rely on some of the benefits of this technology, which is an inherently risky business plan, which means they can't investigate lower risk options. So it's a small market that we need to expand somehow.
Yeah, I don't know. This is going to segue into one of the topics I wanted to talk to.
Yeah, let's
talk
do it.
About. But I got really into biking again this year.
Okay.
I've bought three mountain bikes in the last few months.
Yeah.
I got a little stable at home now. God. So
why do you need three mountain bikes? Help me understand the differences.
They're just different flavors. They're like having three different golf clubs. You know, one's a pitching wedge, one's a driver, one's a putter. You have different jobs for different applications.
What are some of these jobs?
Different tools for different applications.
Briefly, like what are the jobs?
Trail bikes, short travel, long travel, mid travel. We're talking suspension travel. So what's its overall capability and what trails are appropriate? Because some of these bikes are built for big features. And so they're going to be beefier, heavier, not great at pedaling, for example, versus a shorter travel bike, better for maybe your everyday trails.
And you're into it.
Lighter.
You're weight. Into it.
Oh, yeah.
It's not a cheap hobby, Tate.
It's not cheap at all. So I definitely spent more than I should have this year on bikes and just getting back into it. But in all of my shopping, because I did a lot of shopping.
Yeah.
I found that mountain biking, the industry, I think is in that sweet spot where it's like medium to low volume.
Mm-hmm.
Enough so that a lot of the products that I've been looking at have been 3D printed.
Yeah.
And I can tell.
Yeah.
Most of which are not FDM. They are, I've seen a couple FDM parts and, you know, we've talked about seeing that in person. It's kind of a turnoff. But like SLS and powder-based, you know, nylon systems, I've seen a lot more of those type of parts. And awesome. Yeah. I think it's so cool.
Yeah.
And it just, I don't know, it excites me every time I see it.
I have visited a couple manufacturers in that space this year, and all of them unanimously were drawn to what Art Origin parts, the DLP parts.
Okay.
Because the surface finish is pretty much indistinguishable from injection molding.
Yeah.
There's a pretty wide variety of materials that give you different material properties, and the technology can hit the cost per part and the throughput that is in line with, you know, selling hundreds of an individual component, you know, per year, but allows a ton of customization.
Right.
You know, like tons of different SKUs.
Yep.
For example.
Yeah. Like every mountain bike company, for example, makes at least three sizes in one model, right? Mm-hmm. Like a small, medium, and large, right? It gives, for a long time, mountain bike companies have like the rear triangle is what they call it. Just the rear suspension area has been the same for small, medium, and large.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's becoming more popular for them to have size specific rear triangles, which is kind of cool, right?
Yeah.
But along with that, you have components and parts that for a long time have been universal. And now with 3D printing, they have the ability to maybe print some parts.
Yeah.
And not seeing as much metal. It's mostly all plastic. Sure. So lots of accessory type items.
Metal, maybe some boutique manufacturers.
We've seen that.
Offer some metal.
And we've talked about it.
Yeah. But mostly plastics.
Yeah. And there's a few. I think there's an additively manufactured crank set out there that you can buy. And there's cool components. But I guess it just excites me to see like industry adoption. Like it seems like mountain biking as a whole has kind of seen this. And not just bike OEMs, but all the ancillary, you know, companies that support
quote unquote aftermarket.
Yeah, arts. Aftermarket. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. And it's it's super cool to see. It's been exciting me, and I've been like anxious to talk about it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I had a handful of parts that like I'd kind of collected, but I don't have them with me. But there's parts that I would buy. Like I would pay money for a 3D printed part.
See, maybe that's the type of thing that we need to be doing is when we see signs of landing there, like making a concerted effort to create campaigns to expand within that niche, within that industry. I don't know if we as like technology advocates do a good enough job of doing that. You know, you might see a case study, but we could do so much more. You know, we can do so much more.
Yeah. I think mountain biking is a great industry because the margins are there. People are willing to pay for a premium product.
Size of parts.
Yeah.
Aligns well.
Absolutely. And a lot of these, like one of the things that keeps coming to mind is you've seen the bottle holders that hold the bottle to like the lower frame tube.
Yeah.
So just for a water bottle. The industry is starting to put those nut certs on the top tube, on the underside of the top tube as well. So
for like people with short arms?
Well, for certain frames, you could fit two bottles.
Growing up, when the frame was like the top bar was dropped, that was always a female bike.
Yeah.
But now a lot of them are like that.
They're more so like that.
Yeah.
Well, because bikes in our youth were shaped much differently. So bikes have gotten longer, way longer than they used to be. Oh yeah. Like I remember riding a 29-inch wheel bike back when we were kids.
Yeah.
I remember pedaling even with my little feet. Like I probably had like size 8 feet or something like that. Uh-huh. That's probably the size you have right now. But like even with my little feet, when you turned the wheel and were pedaling at the same time, the tire would hit the tips of your feet.
That's right, huh?
Because the wheelbase was just so short. Nowadays, a 29-inch bike, which all my bikes are 29s, full 29ers, but they're long. You have no interference whatsoever, and they're just longer and quote-unquote mm-hmm. slacker. Mm-hmm. So they just handle what totally differently. The head angle. So if you imagine the fork, it's always kind of tilted out, right?
Yeah.
They've slowly raked it out more and more.
Should make turning easier. Old
chopper Harley Davidsons, right? That would be like an extreme rake. That would be very, very, very slack.
Okay.
Which terrible for like low speed stability, fantastic for high speed stability. So these bikes have gotten longer and slacker, so they're more stable at high speeds and they really feel more like motorcycle-ish. When you're going down a trail, it's confidence inspiring. It's not like riding a rickety old, you know, straight up and down bike.
The other aspect of this industry is that it's performance oriented. At least it's marketed that way.
Oh, it is for sure. People will spend money to save 200 grams.
Yeah.
It's stupid. It's silly. But like you'll spend money to save 200 grams, but then you're going to duct tape a spare tube to the bottom side of your, like a tire tube.
Yeah.
To the underside of your bike.
Do you have any desire to design parts and build them here and sell them?
A little bit. Like, okay, so getting back to this is actually a good way to get back to what I was talking about, those nut certs on the top tube. Most bike frames, to your point, have gotten smaller. Like that triangle, the front triangle.
That's right.
Has gotten sleeker and there's less room on the inside of that triangle for bottles and stuff. Usually there's a rear shock in there somewhere.
Yeah.
And depending on how it's oriented, it's taking up a lot of real estate.
And also now you have a lot of these like battery assisted. So the battery even takes up more of that space.
Yep. So you have e-bikes now and every bike has a certain rear suspension geometry that's usually licensed to either that OEM or someone third party owns the rights to that linkage geometry, the linkage setup. So depending on all of that, you have some real estate up front that could be shaped very uniquely to that bike, which opens a great opportunity for additive in that now we can bolt some components to that top tube that I have a couple bikes where it's like, what could I even put there? About the only thing I could fit is maybe a small tool kit or a spare tube.
What about an iPad?
So people are starting to mount actually like GPSs to their handlebars and stuff.
Yeah.
And so that's another opportunity for additive. So there is like, there's an actual, you say it jokingly, no, but there's opportunity everywhere.
You absolutely could, because we have the printers here and it'd be a cool little experiment.
Yeah. And again, getting to the kind of every bike company is trying to create a cool shape. You know, the geometry is what it is. They work off those geometrical numbers and then they create the shape around that. And so there are challenges with the shape. If they could make their own accessories for that shape.
Your issue would be like you'd have to go into the bike shop and then you have an iPhone, right?
Mm-hmm.
You'd have to use your iPhone to like surreptitiously scan the frames so that you can reverse engineer.
Well, okay. So parts. One of the bike companies, and I'll just, Canyon is a bike company. I bought one of their bikes this year. They actually sell some one-off parts for their bikes, which are really cool, I thought. But the problem is I think they're made in Germany. And so a lot of their components aren't available in the US. So if you were an aftermarket company, again, big opportunity there to create a batch of parts. And that's where 3D printing is.
Oh, I know.
Sorry, you hate when I do that.
I do hate that, yep.
I just messed the mic up for you.
I have a friend who's in the industry that has a nice little side hustle building custom watch holders for dirt bikes. So like this watch here, for example, take it off your wrist, put it on the dirt bike.
Okay.
So that you can pick up speed and whatever.
Oh, okay.
And it's not jittering from your, you know, just shaking.
Mm-hmm.
He makes custom ones per watch.
Gotcha.
He just prints them in FDM and sells them.
Nice.
Nice little side gig for him.
Dude, I love it. I love it. But I guess that was my point, though, is that all this time while we've been away, I've been mountain biking.
Nice.
And the whole while I've been seeing additive parts being sold in that industry.
Got to get a piece of that pie, man.
Yeah. And they look good. Like the parts look good. They're something I would bolt to my bike, like no problem.
Yeah.
And that's exciting to me because it's like, dude, maybe this is finally happening.
It's on a per part basis, but my mind goes to SAF, the powder bed nylon, finish it, dye it, call it good.
Yeah.
100%. It's the easiest, highest volume, lowest cost, especially if it's non-structural.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's like a water bottle thing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Although structural, we did SAF wishbones for Thanksgiving. Can't break them.
They don't break. No way.
No, you cannot break them. They'll bend, you know, they'll do the splits kind of, not the full splits, but like if you and I were to try to do the splits about that far.
Oh, not me. I cannot.
What are you?
I'm this not flexible at this all. Is. Yeah. There we go. That's closer.
That's a limiting mindset, by the way.
Tyler is right now in the splits. He's in the full splits, everybody.
Between two chairs, Jean-Claude Van Damme style.
Excuse me. Okay. We don't have a ton of time left. You have a hard stop here in a second. So that's kind of the most exciting thing I had to talk about. I do have a YouTube of the day that I want to hurry and share. I'm not gonna play it. I'm just gonna tell you about it. It's a Benchy. This was sent to me by a listener. It's a Benchy that was printed in 7 minutes and 57 seconds.
How big is the Benchy?
I would say, gosh, 2 by 2 square inches, maybe.
That's a decent sized Benchy.
Yeah, it's not tiny. It's FL Sun S1.
FL Sun S1?
Yeah. Frank Lima Sun like S1.
Sun like the star?
Yeah. So the title of this video is Benchy printed in 7 minutes and 57 seconds. Hmm. FL Sun S1. And you can watch it for yourself. They put a clock right by it, a little digital clock. And you can see that it's being printed in real time. It's one of these Delta style systems. And it's just... the rastering is insane.
I wonder if we'll ever get, you know, like the equivalent to the 4-minute mile. Like what that is. What is that for the Benchy that just totally is paradigm shifting for people's minds? They see that and they're like, oh my God.
I thought that. When I saw this,
for this one, that's it?
I thought, I thought it.
Is 8 minutes the that's the mental barrier or the physical barrier?
I'm interested to see how it scales and what the material limitations are and things like that.
Yeah.
And just the environmental, you know, because this looks like an open system. It doesn't look like it's in an enclosure. Yeah. So we'll see.
It's probably an open system because they're doing something on the parameter side to speed it up. Like they would have to have access to, you know, feeds and speeds.
Yes. Well, we've hit our stop. Is there anything you want to get out in like the last?
I did finish my fence.
You did?
I started my fence around the same
time. Give me some. Yes.
Around the same time as we started this pod. And I know a lot of people put a fence up in a weekend, but it took me 3 years.
It's a beautiful fence, though.
It is a magnificent fence.
Oh, dude, I'm stoked. Thanks. Congratulations. It only took us, what, 2 years of doing this podcast?
Oh, yeah, closer to 3 years.
Okay. Dude, that's a milestone, though, actually. That's huge.
It was huge.
That's momentous.
There's, you know, there's certain things that maybe you start and you realize, okay, well, I totally underestimated how long this is going to take, but just put your head down and get it done.
Dude, you did it. I know. You did it.
Imagine the size of a business I could have
built. I'm kind of living that high right now through you. Like, I'm kind of just, oh, I'm so proud of you, man.
I know.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I don't have anything else to say. Stratus has came out with a new machine. That's the last little tidbit.
F3300. It's
look it up.
Badass.
Yeah. Supposed to be badass.
Yeah.
We'll see.
I've seen them in person. I haven't operated one.
Ooh.
I've seen in their R&D facility, they spent tens of millions of dollars developing this machine, by the way. So not very many 3D printing companies out there can afford that level of R&D, tens of millions of dollars invested into building this thing. I visited their R&D facility. I've seen it twice, dozens of them side by side, churning out parts. And
you've seen them in action.
Seen them in action.
They're a real thing.
Very impressive.
Awesome.
They should start shipping next year.
Okay. Early next year. Yeah.
I think Q2.
Cause they have beta systems out there.
Yeah, they're in beta. There's beta customers.
With customers, yeah.
But they will be shipping in Q2 is what we're told.
Ooh, yeah. So more news to come as Tyler gets his hands on, or if he can just manage someone who gets their hands on it, we'll let you know secondhand.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll let you know secondhand information from here on out. If you want to know how to automate macros in Excel, I'm all about that world now.
Oh, gosh. All right. Well, it was great catching up. This was a nice, short and sweet episode. Great job. Let's do another one.
It's good to be back. And let's talk next week.
Yeah.
Cool.
I'm committed.
Right on.
Okay.
Okay. See ya.
See ya.